you for that. Turn to the 8th chapter of Luke's Gospel. We'll read the 41st of the 56th verse. The 41st of the 56th verse. Sermon title is A Different Kind of Day. A Different Kind of Day. Luke 8, 41 through 56. Starting with verse 41. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a-dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. A woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her issue of blood staunched. Jesus said, "Who touched me?" When all denied, Peter and they that were with him said, "Master, the multitude thronged thee and pressed thee, and sayest thou, who touched me?" And Jesus said, "Somebody hath touched me, for I perceive that virtue is gone out of me." When the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him, and how she was healed immediately. And he said unto her, "Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace." While he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, "Thy daughter is dead. Trouble not the master." But when Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, "Fear not. Believe only, and she shall be made whole." And when he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in, save Peter and James and John, and the father and the mother of the maiden. And all wept and bewailed her. But he said, "Weep not, she is not dead, but sleepeth." They laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. He put them all out and took her by the hand and called, saying, "Maid, arise." And her spirit came again. She arose straightway, and he commanded to give her meat. And her parents were astonished. But he charged them that they should tell no man what was done. Most of us live pretty normal days. I mean, your normal might not be my normal, but it's your normal. But it's still a normal day. You get up, you go to work, you take the kids to school, or you clean the house, you go to the football game, you do all the other things that are just kind of normal in life. They're common to all of us, really. And there's nothing wrong with that. If the truth were known, that's how almost everyone lives their lives. They have a normal. It's the normal things you do in your life, the normal things that are part of who you are, what goes on in your life. Some of you have something unique to the rest of us, but yes, it's common to you. That's what you do. In this particular account, there are some really different things that take place. You'll notice that a ruler of the synagogue came to Jesus, and that's different. When Jesus went through the crowd, there was a different kind of touch that took place. Most of us have gone through crowds maybe all of our lives. I don't know what it's like down here. I don't shop. You understand? I don't go out Christmas shopping. Ruth tells me what she wants. Sometimes she says, "I bought my Christmas gift." And I said, "Okay." And she likes that. I'm satisfied with it. And so that works for us. That's our common. But used to in Dayton, Ohio, I remember going to, there was a store there called Elder Bierman's, and it was kind of like a Sears type store, a clothing store and so forth. And we would go in there, and if you'd ever went in there at Christmas time, oh my, there'd be people everywhere, and they'd be brushing and bumping against you, and that's how the crowd was. Well, that's what the crowd was like here. And yet, there's a different kind of touch that takes place. Also, you'll see that there's a different kind of results that happens when all of this comes together, especially is a different kind of result where death takes place or death is concerned. Now, if you look at it closely, you'd have to admit that this was not what most of us would call the ordinary day. I don't know anyone among those of us who are here that had a day kind of like this in their life. But I do think that if the truth were known, most of us would not mind having that kind of day. Wouldn't it be something to get behind Jesus and touch the hem of his garment and have healing take place in our bodies? Wouldn't it be marvelous when death had taken place in your household to have Jesus walk inside the room and say, "Arise," and then look at you and say, "Fix him supper." When he said, "Give him meat," that's what he was saying, "Fix him supper." I don't know if you understood that part. But that would be a kind of day that most of us would say, "I think I'd like to be there for that." Well, what I'd like to do is look at this with you. And I hope that we can figure out what it will take for you and I to have a different kind of day. Firstly, there's a different outlook. What happened that day where Jesus was concerned was really a different kind of outlook than what was normal for a Jewish religious leader. As we read through the New Testament, we find the Jewish religious leaders did not oftentimes treat Jesus quite like this man's treating Jesus. We know that Jairus was a ruler of a synagogue. He had responsibilities that were unique to his position. From what I've read, it would have been his duty to select the people who read the scriptures and the teachers that came into the synagogue. And he would examine what they would say in their public statements and see that all things were done with decency and in accordance with all the ancestral usage that they were used to in their times. At least that's what one author said. This Jairus was a man who was expected to know what the law said. He would have also known how controversial Jesus was at this particular time. He would have known that the Pharisees and Sadducees did not care a whole lot for Jesus. And there can be no doubt that he knew what it meant for him to seek Jesus out and how that could impact his life and his livelihood. I'm not for sure, but it would seem to me that a man in his position, if this did not work out the right way for him, he could have great, great consequences that could take place in his life. But something had happened that would have caused him to think a little bit differently than what he normally thought. Well, he loved his daughter. It appears that he had only one child and was a daughter, and she was 12 years of age. It says she was the one only daughter. The one only daughter. Michaela, you're the one only daughter now in your household. Isn't that something nice? Say you go to school and they say, "How many kids does your parents have?" And you say, "I'm the one only daughter." Now that's a little different way of saying it than what we would say. You might say, "I'm the only one. I'm the only kid in my house. My parents had me and they couldn't do any better and that was it." There's a lot to be said about that. Come with me and I'll tell you a little bit more about it later and give you the rest of that story. But we'll not go there tonight. But this one only daughter was so sick that her life hung in the balance. There wasn't a doctor that could help. There weren't any home remedies that could do anything. No false god was able to give assurance and help in that particular situation. No one and nothing could help him. His one only daughter was dying. But somehow, he heard about Jesus. He heard that Jesus could heal the sick, and he was hoping that the same Jesus would do that for his daughter. Listen again to what we're shown here in these verses. There came a man named Jairus. He was a ruler of the synagogue. He fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a dying. The condition of his daughter, the needs in his life, gave this religious ruler a different kind of outlook than what he normally would have had. I'd say that most of us would consider things differently too if we were in the same kind of circumstances. If you talk to people that have had massive sickness or some kind of debilitating disease, and they hear about a faith healer coming, and they may not know if they believe that kind of thing, but oftentimes they'll go to something like that because that gives them one opportunity. They're hoping that something can be done that no one else has been able to do. They're hoping that for their loved one or for their own life, that somehow that individual can give them the very thing that they need for their problem and their sorrow, and that they can be lifted up and made well. If our only child were dying, would you not be willing to go and talk to somebody like this? If you've done everything you could, and you have this one child, and this one child is dying, would you be willing to go to someone that maybe some of the folks, maybe the preacher in your church says, that person is a false prophet, that person is this, that person is that. Would you be willing to go try? Oh, my friend, I think most of us would be willing to do anything we could to try to see something happen. Would there be anything too difficult for you to try? Would it cost too much? You hear people that have cancer and there's a special treatment down in Mexico or South America. Hasn't been approved by the FDA yet. And they get in a plane and they go down and they try it. Because they're hoping that somehow, they can be made well. This father's outlook had changed completely. You'll notice that he did not approach Jesus with an attitude that he was a great leader and that Jesus should listen to him because of who he was. When you read this, you note what happened. He fell down at Jesus' feet. He was willing to demean himself. He was willing to do whatever it took. If he could convince this individual that he was willing to show him the right kind of honor, if that would help, he was willing to do it. He may have heard about the healing of the centurion's servant. He might have heard about the storm at sea. He might have heard about the demon man being healed. Whatever took place, whatever caused this to happen, he had a different outlook. I think that sometimes we ought to have a different outlook about some of the things that we look at in life. But we'll get to that in a moment. There was a different touch that took place that day too. Jesus had decided to go with Jairus. And on the way to Jairus' house, something happened that had an impact everybody that was there. Jesus, Jairus, the disciples, the crowd, they all began to make their way toward Jairus' house. I don't know if the crowd was gathering along and maybe building up as they went along because they were wondering what Jesus was going to do. I don't know if they were wanting to see the show. Hey, if you lived in a little town like that where nothing ever happened, and all of a sudden this guy comes along that's healed people and raised people from the dead and stopped storms at the sea, and the local religious leader comes up and says, "Will you come to my house because my daughter's dying?" And if you were in the crowd, wouldn't you go see what happened? I mean, they didn't have TV. They couldn't go down to the local mall. There wasn't a Dollywood around for him, you know. Unless you lived in Rome, then you could go to the Colosseum and watch them kill Christians later in another 100 years or so. See, but folks, this was just a little dirt town, and there they go. As he made his way through the streets, all the people were brushing against him, bumping into him, maybe pushing. He stops. And he says, "Who touched me? Who touched me?" Now, if you read the account, look at the way Peter and the others respond. And they thought that was a crazy question. What do you mean, who touched you? Look at the crowd. Look at the crowd, man. You know, there's probably been 30 people touch you since you began walking down the street. There's this crowd all around. How can you say that? Peter calls them a multitude, by the way. The implication here is that anyone could have touched him. As a matter of fact, it would have only been reasonable to assume that a number of people had touched him. How could Jesus have asked that kind of question? And listen to how Jesus reveals that this is a different kind of touch. Verse 46, "Somebody hath touched me, for I perceive that virtue has gone out of me." This is different. This isn't a, whoops, excuse me, bump. This isn't, please let me get by, you're in my way, brush. This isn't a, hey man, it's good to see you again, tap on the shoulder. This is a different kind of touch. Now, just think with me how many people in that crowd might have needed healing that day. How many people in that crowd had a boatload of problems that they could have used guidance or help on in their lives? How many people in that crowd could have used a miracle? How many people in that crowd needed Jesus to do something? And we know that there's Jairus as well, standing and listening as this exchange takes place. I wonder how that affected him. I wonder if he were wanting to tell Jesus to hurry up because his one only daughter was sick, dying. You know, Jesus, come take care of my daughter and then come back and deal with this lady. I don't mind if she gets healed, but take care of my daughter first. I'm in a hurry. You know, she was dying when I left. And you don't seem to be in as big a rush as I'm in. By the way, is that not how we all are when we have something going on? One time up north, I had a root canal. Never forget it. The dentist, of course, I hate you. A dentist one time asked me to fill out a questionnaire. And he said, what do you dislike the most about going to the dentist? And I wrote down paying the bill. And he told me when he came in to see me, he said, you have to pay the bill. You know, I said, okay. But I went and had a root canal, and the dentist, he did all the work. He said, now, if you have a problem, just let me know. And by 10 o'clock that night, I had a problem. I don't know if you've ever had all the corresponding pain that goes along when it's not, so when something's wrong with it. I don't know what's wrong with it, but something's wrong with it. You know, pull the tooth, I don't care, stop this. So he told me to call him, I did. And at 10:30 at night, he met me in his office. He's the best dentist I ever had in my life, other than the one I go to right now here in Greenville, Tennessee. Craig Shepherd. I mean, this guy really took care of me. I needed him then. Can you imagine what this father's thinking? Give me a break, Jesus. Don't stop. Let's hurry up. Let's get there. But this kind of touch was different. Verse 47 says, when the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. The healing power of Jesus is exhibited there at that moment for everybody to see, including Jairus. The only real question I have about this is, why didn't anybody else say, wait a minute, let's not go any further. I need some of your virtue for my life. I need some healing for me. Don't go anywhere. Let me go get my wife. You know, she's about half crazy and she needs some help. Why not? But they just all stand there and watch. But the woman had touched Jesus in such a way. Well, it was just not casual, and it wasn't calm, and it wasn't common. There's urgency in her touch. There's hope in her touch. There's need in her touch, and there's faith in her touch. She believes that if she could just touch Jesus, her sickness would be gone. And it is. And it is. Well, let's look at a different kind of results. A result. See, this episode with the woman has come to a conclusion. At that very moment, no doubt when Jairus is feeling really good, you know, Jesus actually can heal. They come. And the Bible says in verse 49, while he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, thy daughter is dead. Trouble not the master. In my years as a pastor and also serving in a volunteer capacity as a chaplain, I've had to do a death notice here or there. Never forget, we had a fellow, he was kind of a fringe man in the life of our congregation. He'd had all kinds of problems in his life. He had a family, he had kids that were grown, and this man was using prescription drugs, had over-medicated, and got on the freeway going the wrong way. Had a head-on collision with another guy, and this man was killed instantly. And I'll never forget, they called me up and told me to go notify his oldest son. And his oldest son was working at a type of feed store, a rather large one. They had a warehouse, and he would load trucks and deliver feed and all that kind of stuff. And I'll never forget going up to him. He was sitting in the cab of the truck, getting ready to go. And when I walked up, he looked over at me and said, hi, how you doing? And I said, Vince, I hate to tell you this, but your father was killed in a car wreck today. And I'll never forget the look of shock. And I don't think that's a good enough word for it. It was like everything drained out of him. And he sat there and his head went down. Can you imagine what this father felt at that very moment emotionally? They come from his house and they say, your daughter's dead. Your one only daughter. Your one only daughter. She's dead. She's dead. She is dead. A finality to it. And then, on top of that, don't trouble the master. You know what they're saying, don't you? He can't do anything about this. It's over. Nothing else can happen. Go home and get ready for the funeral. Now's the time to mourn and to bury her. And then life must go on. And your child will no longer be a part of your life. But you have to keep in mind one thing. Jesus is there. Jesus is there. And this is what he says. When Jesus heard it, he answered him and said, fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole. What he's doing is letting Jairus know that there will be a different result where his daughter is concerned. He's saying, believe, Jairus, believe. In spite of everything that's happened, believe. Could it be? Now, maybe this is just my mind trying to look at this, and I don't know, but it could it be that at that very moment, all of heaven stood up and shouted out loud to Jairus? I don't know if he could hear them, but maybe they were just trying to get him to hear. Believe, Jairus, she will live. This is the Creator talking to you. Listen to Him. Pay no attention to the crowd. Don't look at the circumstances. Don't let the critics draw you away and crush you. Listen. As they came home to all those who are there that are already mourning, that already know what the results are, but the results is far different than anything they'd ever seen. You see, Jesus is among them. They laugh at Him. He says, don't worry, she only sleepeth. And they laugh. Matter of fact, there's some real harsh words used here. They scorn Him. They'd seen death before. But one thing they had never seen was death when Jesus is there. And Jesus went in the room and said, maid, arise. Now, I don't know, what would you expect for Him to do on a resurrection type thing? You know, she's dead, He's going to raise her. You know, surely, you know, get the band together, you know. Hey, guys, at the exact moment, play, hit that note, you know, where you go up in the air, dun-da-dun, you know, here comes Superman. Yeah. You know, just get the crowd around, get the newspaper guys in, TV crew, get them here. And he would, you know, go through a routine of some kind, you know, jump up and down, twirl three times. Yeah. Jesus says, get up. Get up, girl. Get up. That's it. It could have been more dramatic, couldn't it? I mean, couldn't he have done it? Instead, Jesus says, get up. And she got up. Now, that's different sort of results than they'd ever seen. Anytime anybody ever died before, they stuck them in the ground. You know that. But that day, it was different. Death draws back, flees from the body of this young girl, releases her soul because the giver of life is present, and death has no power where Jesus appears. It has no power where Jesus is at. By the way, know this, when physical death comes to you and your soul escapes your body because Jesus has given you eternal life, there's a hands-off policy on your soul where death is concerned. It cannot control your soul. And the reason is, there's a very special reason for it. And it's simply that Jesus is there. You see, when He lives in you and physical death comes, it steps back when it sees Jesus, because your soul cannot be touched by it. Your soul cannot be affected by it. The person that you are still lives because Jesus is there. Note that. Note it very clearly for yourself, because one day, for some not too long, and for others it may be years, but one day you'll lay in the hospital bed. You'll be at your house. The family will be gathered around. You'll be driving your car and you won't see that truck and all those kinds of things, and you will die. But you won't. And because Jesus is there, you'll live. you'll live. Death can't do anything about it. Death looks at you and he knows that he can't affect you like that. Death cannot do anything. When Jesus is there, death cannot stay because it was defeated by him on Calvary. Now that's a different result both for that girl and for anybody who was present there that day. They'd never seen anything like this. What's the difference in all of this? Well, I think the difference is merely faith. Note that faith moved both this father and the woman who had the issue of blood to go to Jesus. They were going through their life. They were dealing with their things. They were trying to overcome. They were sorrowful. They were overwhelmed on all those kinds of things that take place in life. And suddenly in their mind and in their heart, somehow they thought about Jesus. And no doubt the devil might have said to them, you know, it doesn't do any good. You know, nobody's been able to help. What makes you think Jesus can do anything? And they believed Jesus. Note when the word came that death had overwhelmed the girl that Jesus said, fear not, believe only. She shall be whole. But also note that Jesus had just given this man a boost to his faith. The woman had been healed, and he has already declared to her, daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. When Jairus walks within the sound of the house, he hears all the wailing, all the crying, all the weeping. And Jesus walks in and he states this, weep not, she is not dead, but sleepeth. I think that the hearts of all those in eternity are crying, believe Jesus at this moment. Believe Jesus. The eternal God is with you and death cannot stand against him. Believe and you will have your daughter breathing and walking in your midst again. And somehow, in the swirl of all of that, Jairus put the doubters out of the room and saw Jesus. He believed. Because of his faith, he had his daughter back. His one only daughter. But it just wasn't faith. It was faith in Jesus. That's the difference. Friends, sometimes we don't have what we want to have in our life because we have no faith that Jesus can do that. The crowd stands and they say, you can't do it. Never been done that way before. You can't overcome. You're not smart enough. You're not capable enough. You can't get it done. You have too many strikes against you. Friends, anybody that has too many strikes against them ought to meet Jesus. He gives you a new count on the strikeout. He's the one. And that's the difference. We happen to live in a world of death and sorrow. All around us is sin and difficulty. And we hear people declare that there's no hope. But I want you to know, as Christians today, there is hope. You must come with a different outlook and you must reach out with a different kind of touch and you must believe that there can be a different result. And if you'll have faith in Jesus, you'll find out that he's the difference maker. That's what changed the day. Jesus. Father, here tonight you have allowed us to see your word and oh God, what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful truth that we have seen here. God, the ordinary day, the people going through ordinary life, facing ordinary problems, dealing with ordinary hurts and difficulties. But there was something different about that day. And it was the fact that Jesus had walked into the midst. Oh God, there's men and women here this evening. And they have Jesus with them, but they've not been able to have faith that you can do it. Or maybe they've just heard all the noise around them, and they just haven't thought that you're standing there saying, have faith. She is not dead. She just sleeps. God, help us to see this differently. Help us to have a different outlook. Help us to touch you in a different way, not the common, ordinary way where we just say, oh, Jesus, do something, amen, and get up and go, but where we grab a hold of you, touch your garments, allow the virtue of Jesus to flow into our lives. God, may we see different results because of the faith that we have in Jesus, in Jesus. God, may this be a different day for us. For those who sit here tonight who need help, may this be a different day. For those who need healing for their soul or their mind or their body, may this be a different day. May they come to you. May they reach out and touch you and believe you. And may healing take place. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand? If you'd like to pray, please come. If you'd like to have somebody to anoint you, I invite you to our altars.